Jairada Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Jairada
Shrimad Bhagavatam ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda ki Gaura Premanandi. Hare Krishna. So we'll read from the Srila Prabhupada Nectar. I guess we're starting from chapter 43, which is entitled Personal. His eyes. In the nectar of devotion. Oh, you read that already? Okay, I'm going 44 then, which is called Realizations. My realization from my personal meetings with Srila Prabhupada was that he related to me as I related to him. When I was humble, he was very merciful to me. When I was proud, Srila Prabhupada would smash my pride. When I first met Srila Prabhupada in the Calcutta temple in 1971, I went in and just sat down. He asked me who I was and if I had any questions. And I said to him, well, why not Buddhism? I was a wise guy. Srila Prabhupada answered, What does a Buddhist believe? I tried to recall my college course, Philosophy 101. And I said something about the Eightfold Noble Path and the Fourfold. I kind of mumbled what I could about what the Buddha had said, but I was already defeated because I couldn't even think of what the Buddha had said. The next time I met Srila Prabhupada was at the Mayapur Festival in 1972. After first meeting Srila Prabhupada, I began chanting Hare Krishna and become a vegetarian. This time, I wasn't so proud. I was thinking, actually, Srila Prabhupada may know the answers to all the secrets of life. I went in to see him with the mood that he was the perfect spiritual master. Although my surrender was only on a theoretical basis, I approached him submissively, the way it says in the Bhagavad Gita, and I was rendering service while I was staying in Mayapur. Without knowing it, I was following the injunction of the Gita. Therefore, naturally, Srila Prabhupada reciprocated by rendering to me the absolute truth. Those conversations are all published in the book Perfect Questions and Perfect Answers. Srila Prabhupada was very merciful to me, and even said to me, you are a very good boy. The next time I saw Srila Prabhupada was again in Calcutta. By now, I was much more respectful. When I went in to see him, he was drinking coconut juice. The first thing he did was give me some. I entered his room feeling myself very insignificant. Then Srila Prabhupada immediately gave me his own coconut juice to drink. It was just a little thing, but it really touched me. Another time I met him in 1973, I was also feeling very insignificant. This was when Srila Prabhupada was in New York at the Brooklyn Temple. He was walking from his quarters to the temple room, and I was standing in the hallway packed with devotees. And I was thinking, I hope he doesn't even see me. When Srila Prabhupada walked by, we all offered obeisances, and I kept my head all the way down, saying the prayers slowly to make sure that he wouldn't pass, that he'd be past me by the time I would stand up. But what I did know was that Srila Prabhupada had stopped and was waiting for me. Slowly I finished the prayers and sat up, and there was Srila Prabhupada right in front of me. He said, oh, you're here. He put his arms around me and gave me a hug. Another time, however, Srila Prabhupada smashed my false ego. He was on a walk in Denver, and I joined him. Yadubara said, Srila Prabhupada, here's that Peace Corps worker. He is here to see you again. On this occasion, I was feeling very proud, thinking, yes, Srila Prabhupada would be very glad to see me. And Prabhupada only said, oh, and that was all he said. One time, I also met Srila Prabhupada in his room in New Orleans. On this occasion, I had walked insignificantly and sat in the back of the room. I didn't want Srila Prabhupada to see me. The room was full of devotees, including many leaders. So I hid in the back. But Srila Prabhupada saw me, and he paused in the middle of the darshan. He said, come here. I moved up about a foot, and he said, no, you come here. And I inched forward a little more. Then Brahmananda turned and said, come here. And I wound up sitting up next to Srila Prabhupada at his feet. He wanted me to sit there. This time I was ready to get initiated. I was proud again. This was in 1976, and I was thinking, now Srila Prabhupada will be so pleased with me. This is wonderful. Srila Prabhupada did not personally perform the initiation ceremony. He was feeling ill, but he was sitting on the Vyasasan and then was giving out cookies. I was not very far away from Srila Prabhupada, and I looked at him directly, thinking, now I'm here. I'm going to get initiated. Prabhupada will be so glad to see me. I looked right at Srila Prabhupada because before he had recognized me in New Orleans and in the hallway at Henry Street in Brooklyn. I was thinking, now I will be recognized again. I was actually thinking like that. I can remember. When I looked straight at Srila Prabhupada, he looked right through me. He didn't even see me. He looked directly through me. It was the most eerie feeling. Srila Prabhupada looked at me and not seeing me. It was the most severe chastisement he could give me for being proud. So I am convinced that Srila Prabhupada related to me as I related to him. If I was humble, he was kind. When I was puffed up, he practically ignored me. And this is Brahma Tirtha Das Adhika. Alright, we'll read one more. I'll read 45. In 1972, Atreya Rishi arranged for Bob Cohen, Layer Brahma Tirtha, and his wife to have a private darshan with Srila Prabhupada. Bob Cohen's wife had been coming to the temple for several months, and she was determined that no one was going to make her chant Hare Krishna. She went to the temple because her husband went. The devotee would say, Hare Krishna, Barbara, and she would reply, Hi. It was only her and her husband and maybe 8 or 10 sannyasis in the room that day. Bob offered prostrate obeisances and Barbara only bowed her head. Srila Prabhupada looked at her and said, So, are you interested in Krishna consciousness? She didn't understand a word he said. Every time everything had to be translated for her. Srila Prabhupada spoke for maybe an hour. And Barbara was impressed by him, although she didn't know exactly why. She'd asked Srila Prabhupada a few questions, but was too new to really appreciate Krishna consciousness at that time. Srila Prabhupada was merciful to her. Later, he passed out rasagulas. Hold out your hand, he said to Barbara, and he placed a rasagula in her hand. Then it was time for him to leave. Bob Cohen was going to be driving Srila Prabhupada to the airport, and everyone else was leaving the room. Barbara lingered around the room until everyone was out. Then she turned to Srila Prabhupada, folded her hands, and looked him straight in the eye, very deliberately said, Hare Krishna. With an expression of welcome, Prabhupada replied, Jai! And somehow Barbara was sure that Srila Prabhupada knew that she had never willingly chanted Hare Krishna before, and this was the first time she had really chanted. This knowing and personal reciprocation seemed very wonderful to her, and she at once became determined to try to become a devotee. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.
Who's that Bob from? Who's Bob?
Bob? Yeah. He was a Peace Corps worker. And he had a darshan with Srila Prabhupada. He had questions from Prabhupada and answers. And the book is called Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers.
Oh.
And he wound up being initiated as Brahma Tirtha Das.
Oh.
Yeah. So. It's amazing how the guru, Prabhupada especially, the description of just when he was proud, Prabhupada knew.
Yeah.
And didn't even have to even say anything, could just look right past him. And he'd never say. So, alright, so we'll begin the Srimad Bhagavatam reading. We are reading, we're on the 6th canto, chapter 4, and I believe we're on verse 53, is that correct?
In the next chapter,
I think.
Chapter 5.
We're chapter 5?
Yeah.
Oh, we're on chapter 5 now. Okay, so the marker in here is wrong.
No.
Have we read, have we started it, or have we just finished 4 last
the
time?
The second verse with the purport.
Okay.
The first verse with the purport yesterday.
Which verse?
The first verse with the purport is...
Because I'm on 6.5 and there's no purport.
Yeah, it's 6.5 and then, alright, so it started at 9 and then 11 has a purport.
Okay, so we'll read 9 together. Yeah.
6 to 8 has a purport.
We did it wrong yesterday.
So did we have we read 6 through 8?
I think so.
We did 6 to 8 yesterday.
Oh, you, okay, did 6 through 8 yesterday, so we'll read 9 today. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskritya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Devam Saraswatam Vyasam.
Tato Jayam Udire. Okay, so we'll read Canto 6, Chapter 5, Verse 9. And this chapter is entitled Narada Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha. So, Katam Swapitur Adesham. Katam Swapitur Adesham. Abhidvamso Vipaschitaha
Vipaschitaha
Abhidvamso Vipaschitaha Anurupam
Anurupam
Abhigyaya
Abhigyaya
Anurupam Abhigyaya
Anurupam Abhigyaya
Aho
Sargam
Karishyata
Parishyata
Aho Sargam Karishyata
Aho Sargam Karishyata
Katam Swapitur Adesham
Katam Swapitur Adesham
Abhidvamsho Vipaschitaha
Abhidvamsho Vipaschitaha
Anurupam Abhigyaya
Anurupam Abhigyaya
Aho Sargam Karishyata
Aho Sargam Karishyata
Katam Swapitur Adesham
Katam Swapitur Adesham
Abhidvamsho Vipaschitaha
Abhidvamsho Vipaschitaha
Anurupam Avigyaya
Anurupam Avigyaya
Aho Sargam Karishyata
Aho Sargam Karishyata.
So we're on
chapter.
Yeah, we're on chapter 5, text 10.
Text 10?
Yeah. Oh no, sorry, text 9. Sorry.
Text 9.
Katam Swapitur Adesham.
Abhidvam Swapitaha.
Abhidvam Swapitaha.
Anurupam Avijnaya.
Anurupam Avijnaya. Ahom Sarga Karishyata Katam Swapiputur Adesham
Katam Swapitur Adesham
Abhidva
Rishu Vipashitam
Vidhamsho Vipaschitaha
Anarupam Abjanaya
Anarupam Avijnaya
Aho Sargam Karishyata
Aho Sargam Karishyata
Katam
Katam
How?
How?
Swapi tu.
Swapi tu.
Of your own father.
Of your own father.
Adesham.
Adesham.
The order.
The order.
Avidvamsaha.
Avidvamsaha.
Ignorant.
Ignorant.
Vipaschitaha.
Vipaschitaha.
One who knows everything.
Who knows everything.
Anurupam.
Anurupam.
Suitable for you.
Suitable for you.
Avijaya.
Avijaya.
Without knowing.
Without knowing.
Aho.
Aho.
Alas.
Alas.
Sargam.
Sargam.
The creation.
The creation.
Karishyata.
Karishyata.
You will perform.
You will perform.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Abhayachevinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Alas, your father is omniscient, but you do not know his actual order. Without knowing the actual purpose of your father, how will you create progeny? Mm-hmm. So, please repeat. Alas.
Alas.
Your father is omniscient.
Your father is omniscient.
But you do not know his actual order.
But you do not know his actual order.
Without knowing the actual purpose of your father.
Without knowing the actual purpose of your father.
How you create progeny.
How you create progeny.
Okay. So we read verse 10 and 11, and we'll read the purport for verse 11. Sri Shuka Uvacha.
Sri Shuka Uvacha.
Tam Nisham Yatta Haryasha. Outpatika manishaya.
Outpatika manishaya.
Vacha kutam tu devarshe.
Vacha kutam tu devarshe.
Swaya vivam shodhiya.
Swaya vivam shodhiya.
Shishuka
Goswami said,
hearing these enigmatic words of Narada Muni, the Harivashyas considered them with their natural intelligence, without help from others. All right, and we read verse 11. Bhukshetram jiva samjatyat.
Bhukshetram jiva samjatyat.
Anadi nija badanam.
Anadi nija badanam.
Adrishtra tasya nirvanam.
Adrishtra tasya nirvanam.
Kim asat karma bir bhavet.
Kim asat karma bir bhavet.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Haryashas understood the meaning of Narada's words as follows. Quote, the word bhu, the earth, refers to the field of activities, the material body, which is a result of a living entity's actions, is his field of activities and gives him false designations. Since time immemorial, he has received various types of material bodies, which are the roots of bondage to the material world. If one foolishly engages in temporary fruit of activities and does not look toward the cessation of this bondage, what will be the benefit of his actions? Purport. Narada Muni spoke to the Haryashas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, about 10 allegorical subjects. The king, the kingdom, the river, the house, the physical elements, and so forth. After considering these by themselves, the Haryashas could understand that the living entity engaged in his body seeks happiness, but takes no interest in how to become free from his engagement. This is a very important verse, since all the living entities in the material world are very active, having obtained their particular types of bodies. A man works all day and night for sense gratification, and animals like hogs and dogs also work for sense gratification all day and night. Birds, beasts, and all other conditioned living entities engaged in various activities without knowing the soul encaged within the body. Especially in the human form of life, one's duty is to act in such a way that he can release himself from this engagement. But without the instructions of Narada or his representative in the disciplic succession, people blindly engage themselves in bodily activities to enjoy maya sukha, flickering temporary happiness. They do not know how to become free from their material engagement. Vrishabhadeva therefore said that such activity is not at all good, since it encages the soul again and again, and a bodily is subjected to threefold miseries of the material condition. The Haryashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, could immediately understand the purport of Narada's instructions. Our Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant for such enlightenment. We are trying to enlighten humanity so that people may come to the understanding that they should work hard in tapasya for self-realization and freedom from the continuous bondage of birth, death, old age, and disease in one body after another. Maya, however, is very strong. She is very expert in putting impediments in the way of this understanding. Therefore, sometimes one comes to the Krishna consciousness movement, but again falls into the clutches of Maya, not understanding the importance of this movement. Om Ajnatimirandasya Gananjana Shivakaya Chakshu Unmalitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Kuroti Vachalam Pangunangate Kadin Yakripatamaham Pande Shri Guru Dinatayana Vantrikalpaturumbaschakripasundu-evaccha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'll read that last verse again. Bhukshetram jiva samkhyatyat anari nija badhanam adricha tasya nirvanam kim asatkame birbhavet. The Haryashvas understood the meaning of Narada's words as follows. The word bhu, the earth, refers to the field of activities, the material body, which is a result of the living entity's actions, is his field of activities, and it gives him false designations. Since time immemorial, he has received various types of material bodies, which are the roots of bondage into the material world. If one foolishly engages in temporary fruit of activities and does not look toward the cessation of this bondage, what will be the benefit of his actions? Hare Krishna. This is the beginning of a very wonderful pastime. Wonderful in the sense that Prajapati Daksha, his mission is to increase the population of the earth. The world was not much populated at that point. There weren't that many people, so he needed humanity. So he created progeny to therefore increase the progeny of the earth and so forth. And here comes Narada Muni. And Narada Muni has a different program in mind. Narada Muni is actually just explaining the truth about engagement in this material world. The individual soul is originally part and parcel of the personality of Godhead. It is described like fire has sparks coming forth from it. So the personality of Godhead is the source of all creation, he's the source of all existence, and he's the source of all jivas. So we are eternally connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the potentiality for bhakti, for a loving devotional connection with the Supreme Lord is also there. The soul, by nature, will never find happiness in this material world. The soul wanders birth after birth after birth in various species of life. Sometimes a human being, sometimes a lower species, sometimes a demigod. But none of these conditions ever provide satisfaction for the soul. There's no safety in this world. There's no real pleasure in the engagement of the material energy. There is only suffering and the cessation of suffering. A person may be hungry, and they may be feeling the pangs of hunger. And that person may come across some delicious food, come across a feast, and he may partake in that. And that will relieve the suffering of hunger, but you cannot say that's actual pleasure. Not in the sense that the soul is satisfied. The desire to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. All living entities engage in these four activities in various capacities. Some humans, people, may relish the sport of hunting. They may get, you know, their gear, their clothing, and their guns, and their telescopes, and this, and they may make plans. They'll fly to Africa, and they'll hire somebody to take them out in the jungle and do all this and that. And they go through great expense and great effort just to satisfy that hunger. But that satisfaction and that ability to engage in activity is nothing compared to that individual soul who's born into a tiger's body. That body's built for hunting. The claws, the teeth, the muscle structure, the way it's able to run at incredible speeds. That body is meant. So for those who take this human form of life and waste it with simple activities or going after something like hunting, if they're in that consciousness, then they'll be rewarded with the body of a tiger in the next life. May not be a tiger in the Serengeti. He may be a tiger in the zoo. And he'll get to chase his own tail around his cage, you know, bread and butter, you know, run around like that. So there's no guarantee that just because they get the body that they want, it will be in the condition that they want. Or if they really enjoy the cruel sport of hunting, it's described in the previous, previous canto, the special type of hell for those who are cruel to animals. But regardless of whether they find some relief, a temporary relief, still the soul is never satisfied. The soul is always hankering for liberation, for freedom, for real happiness, for real connection, for real safety. It can never find it in this world. There's always danger at each step. So what to do? So persons like Narada Muni, we have our program. Prajapati has his sons. All right, now I got my sons. They're going to take care of... I can't do it myself. My sons are going to enact my will. They're basically extensions of his own ego. They're going to come. I have them. I'm all set. Narada Muni comes, disrupts that program. You're not this body. You're a spirit soul. You're never going to find happiness. You don't even know what the purpose of life is. You don't even know what your father's purpose is. You don't know anything. Here is the truth. You're not this body. You're a spirit soul. The way we find happiness is through spiritual elevation, through connecting ourselves with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada did the same thing. America, 1960s, very materialistic culture. America was very wealthy, very powerful. We were about ready to send a person to the moon. We controlled everything. The youth said, we don't want that. We want something else. So they took to hippie culture. Drugs, sex, rock and roll, tune in, drop out, that whole thing. So the parents had their program. The hippies had their program. Srila Prabhupada, he came. He had a separate program. Everybody was talking revolution at that time, right? You know, Black Panthers had the revolution. Gloria Steinem had her revolution. Everybody had their revolution. The Beatles had their revolution. Prabhupada said, no, this is the real revolution. The revolution is turning away. Revolve. Turn away from this materialistic culture. turn away from this egoism, turn to Krishna. That's a real revolution. Turning to Krishna means we're making a revolution. Prabhupada said, taking up Krishna consciousness is a war against Maya. People want to fight a good fight, that's a good fight. Give our hearts to Krishna. And Maya, she won't make it easy. Maya is not going to say, oh, okay, go right ahead. No, Maya goes, oh, okay, you can go, but what about this? What about this? Oh, you have so much wealth you can have here. You can have so much enjoyment. You can do this, you can do this. You can have this great kingdom. You can have whatever. So, in his purport, Prabhupada said that, yes, even though a pure devotee may come, not everybody will always stick with the program. But for those who do, those who are able to persevere, and as we saw here with Brahma Tirtha Prabhu, we were reading from the Prabhupada Nectar, and Brahma Tirtha, Bob Cohen, he spoke about how when he was in a very humble mood, Prabhupada was very merciful to him. Would even wait. Prabhupada would be walking by, people, devotees pop offering obeisances, and Prabhupada would wait for him to stand up to embrace him. He said, but when he'd be proud, Prabhupada would cut right through that. So, similarly, for those who are endeavoring for this very lofty and very wonderful and sublime goal, beyond simply engaging in our duties, beyond wealth, trying to procure wealth, beyond trying to enjoy the senses, even beyond liberation. Krishna bhakti is something which is beyond liberation. Liberation can mean merging into the Brahman. It can mean going to the void, like the Buddhists want to. So yuja mukti. Devotees don't want any of that. Devotees simply want to be engaged in the service of Krishna eternally. This is actually for us the highest goal, pure devotional service. So we may be endeavoring for this lofty goal, but there are impediments along the way. And these are called anarthas, things which are not wanted. We may make offenses. We may have some misconception. We may have our personal desires. And there may be weaknesses of heart. You know, we may have a desire for fame. You know, sometimes, you know, we think of the word humility as people, oh, I'm so humble. No, humility means that you don't want to be recognized. Humility means that you recognize that you understand or have the realization that we're insignificant. That as jivas, we're tiny little sparks. We're one one-thousandth tip of a hair. So if you take a little hair on your head, cut it in half, cut that in half, and do that 10,000 times, that's how big we are. How big are we? We're nothing. But we're something. We're not nothing. We're something. We're Satchitananda. And Krishna, he's also Satchitananda. So we are spirit soul. We may not be great, but we are spirit soul. And this spirit soul, which is animating our body, is animating the body of the elephant, is animating the life of the demigod, is animating the life of an ant. This is the same soul. And that same soul is part and parcel of the personality of Godhead. And we have an eternal relationship. We could be dancing with Krishna in the spiritual world. We could be playing with Krishna in the spiritual world. We could be serving Krishna in so many wonderful, loving ways. And experiencing full safety, full knowledge, and full bliss with Krishna and all the devotees in the spiritual world. But here we are. We're in these material bodies. Somewhere along the line, we made the wrong calculation. We made a mistake. But the mercy of Krishna is that he'll send his pure devotee. He'll send Narada Muni. He'll send Srila Prabhupada. And he'll say, no, you've forgotten yourself. You're not these bodies. Forget all this stuff. This is not you. This is a temporary designation. Yes, you may have your duties in life, but don't forget the goal. And here is the goal of life, and here is the means to attain that goal. And Prabhupada made it so simple. It said, of all the 64 angas, the ninefold path of bhakti, sravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, is the best. And even amongst the ninefold path, the chanting of nam sankirtan. So this nam sankirtan, this chanting of Hare Krishna, is sufficient for awakening our pure God consciousness. And all success is there. But we just have to take it up as our life's mission. We cannot, this isn't a hobby. This isn't just some plaything that we do once a week. You know, like people are weekend warriors and they'll like, whatever. No, this has to be our day-to-day. We wake up and we chant Hare Krishna. We chant Hare Krishna throughout the day. We have some free time, chant. Or read Srila Prabhupada's books. Whatever time we have, we make time. If we don't have time, we make time. You can make time for anything, for any kind of nonsense. But if we make this our life's goal, then we'll become happy. And I know so many people, very nice, a devotee comes midday, his life is very difficult, very challenging, so many different ways. And he says he comes, but when he comes and we have kirtan, he says, I feel so much better. I suddenly don't have worries. He actually has worries in life, but for that time being, and so in this age of Kali, the safest place we can be is in Nam Sankirtan. Everywhere else is danger. So I think I'm going to end here because it's almost 9 o'clock. Does anybody have any questions or comments or realizations? Muktaji, you always have some wonderful...
He heard some. He heard some words, and he thought, "Oh, that sounds far out." And he said, "Oh, okay, I'm a Buddhist." But when Prabhupada asked him, he had no idea what Buddhism was. In the beginning, especially in the beginning, but still, today we're thinking. We're all thinking, oh, I'm a very intelligent person. Look at, I'm very intelligent. And we quickly learn in Krishna consciousness from hearing from devotees that we're not considered intelligent. We're considered the Prabhupada fool number one. You were talking about that too.
Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki
Jai
Srila Abhay Chiravanda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Gaura Prema Nandi.